No taxation without representation. 200 years of exploitation in the capital of this nation. No representation in the capital of this nation. 200 years of exploitation. Give the people their right to vote.
Someone asked me, was it true? The voting rights of the district were long overdue.
That was Sweet Honey in the Rock with Give the People the Right to Vote. Hello and welcome to Shadow Politics, an hour-long grassroots talk show which will attempt to shine a light on the issues that you care about. I'm your host, United States Senator Michael D. Brown, coming to you live from the District of Columbia, America's last colony. I am joined by my co-host, Kathleen Gomez, and together we hope our show will start a dialogue with America about the issues that are important to you and affect the lives of all of us. So join in the discussion by calling in at 888-627-6008. That's 888-627-6008, or Skype us at BBS Radio 1. We have no guests today, so we're going to wing it and talk about whatever's on our mind, and hopefully we'll get you to join in the conversation. Before we get started, however, let me first introduce my co-host, Kathleen Gomez, who is joining us from my living room. She's come from all the way from Arizona to sit here, and we're glad to have her with us. Hey, Kathleen, what's going on?
Oh, not much. You have a lovely living room, by the way.
Well, we work hard at it, yeah.
Your wife works hard at it.
I know, she does.
You have a lovely house, and thank you for putting up with me as I travel around the country, going from one place and one state to the next. I think on some kind of mission. I haven't decided what it is yet, though.
To save America through shadow politics, by bringing people over to the good side, into the light from the shadows. From the shadow senator into the light.
Well, let's get down and dirty and into the nitty gritty. What do you think?
Yeah. Well, it all depends on what you mean by that, but
Listen, I've been out here and it's an election year, and of course, you know, the politicians are out, especially the local ones. Okay, are out in full gear and saying all kinds of great things. And I didn't know so many were for statehood. It is amazing how many of them are for statehood.
Well, you know, that's the old saying, right? That invention has many mothers. Success has many mothers. And that's a good segue, because we've been successful lately. And, you know, we've talked about it on the show before, but a few weeks ago on September 15th, we testified for the first time in front of the United States Senate on the statehood bill, the new Columbia Admission Act, which is before both the House and the Senate. We've got 129 co-sponsors at last count. That's more co-sponsors than we've had on a bill to make the people of District of Columbia equal since our constitutional amendment in the 1970s. So we're rolling. And everybody's jumping on the train, and that's okay,
because that's
what we want. We want to get everybody on the list, so everybody on the train.
So how do you hold these people accountable for them all being for statehood? And once they get elected, what do you do? How do you think the movement should go to make sure that these guys follow through? Because the way they all seem, you know, taking pictures with the D.C. flag and on everything in any way they can, they're talking about statehood. And I'm wondering, did you ever see any of these guys when you were, you know, getting arrested or at the
I mean, like I say, some of them have come around late, but that's okay. we just need to get everybody on the right, on going in the same direction. And as soon as that happens, we'll all be better for it. I'm happy to see them, even though some of them are late coming to the party. But I thought, you know, we'd try something new tonight. This is brand new. Even Kathleen doesn't know about it. Because the reason Kathleen doesn't know about it is because I just thought about it like 7.5 seconds ago. So we're going to try something really, really brand new. And that is, I'm going to go through AOL and I'm going to look at some of the headlines and maybe we can talk about them. I mean, it's just incredible what gets across the internet. The first thing that I see on AOL tonight is that the deadline looms for protesters to back down in Hong Kong. Well, you know, that's important to all of us that fight for democracy. And so we want to support the people in Hong Kong. We know that they're going through the growing pains that we've all gone through in democracy. And this is a terrible situation that we have in the city. I'm sorry, in Hong Kong. And we've got to change that. So that's the first story on the internet tonight. And moving on, after I'm sure everybody's heard that story, but the next thing we're about is, let's see, what do we say here? Okay, the Alliance is reaching a deadline. We're standing firmly behind you people in Hong Kong. We hope that things are going well. Is Kathleen back with us?
Yes.
Off for a while.
I tell you, you know, it's amazing because I am sitting amongst like two computers, an iPad, a Mac, a PC, and, you know, we're becoming so reliant on all these things. And then when they don't work, it's like chaos.
Yeah, I know. It's easy to throw old people into chaos. I'm trying to do three things here, and I forgot where I was. But in case you, because you were off for a minute, you didn't hear, I'm going through the AOL list just to see what's going on in the world. And the first thing is about the protest in Hong Kong, which seems to be getting the Chinese government's cracking down more on the protesters, which is always the case, isn't it?
They had a huge rally going on down in Chinatown, although Chinatown doesn't look like it used to. But there was a whole big affair going on, not anything that was like, say, in the streets, but in the park. I think they had arranged something to celebrate the independence. So it was very, very well attended. And you know, I was talking to the people, and I was asking them, I said, well, do you live in the neighborhood? Because remember, there was quite a neighborhood of the Chinese who lived in that area, and all of them were from Maryland or Virginia, which always intrigues me, and it brings me back to what you always are saying, that, you know, most of the people are, you know, there's so many that come into the city and out of the city so often and have their celebrations, and you wonder if everyone's, you know, not from DC, then, you know, the cost and the burdens you have of everyone's rallies and everyone's events, and, you know, because they want it to be in the capital. I mean, the cost to the city, or maybe it's the federal government, maybe it's both, it's got to be huge.
Well, yeah, and it all depends on where they are. So if it's a protest on the mall, then the federal government is absorbing most of the costs. But D.C. always absorbs some of the costs because we've always got D.C. police and fire present no matter what's going on. You know, even when the federal police are doing stuff, when the Secret Service is out there, when the Capitol Police are out there, there's always a D.C. cop somewhere, because if they have to make an arrest, they have to hand them over to the D.C. police. I mean, the U.S. Capitol Police they've arrested me for protesting, so I can tell you they're very capable of making an arrest. But they're, very often there's a D.C. cop, especially if there's a large protest, because the D.C. police are generally involved and the fire department. So we're always absorbing some of the cost. Let's move on.
I have something that's big news. There is, as far as the Senate is going, is whether or not who's going to take control. You know, a long time Kansas senator, what is his name? Oh, Bob.
Dole.
No.
From Kansas.
No. This gentleman is a senator right now. He doesn't own a house. I can't believe. On AOL, should talk about it, because they've been talking about the fact that Pat Roberts, that's who it is, I think he's been in the Senate for about 30 some odd years or more. He doesn't even own property in the town that he says he's from, which has got like a Western name to it. I forget the name of it. And he actually, when he goes home, which is very, very rare, they say he hasn't been back to Kansas in a long time. He has a house in Virginia. His children went to Virginia, new schools in Virginia. But because of the fact that he hasn't done anything for Kansas, I mean, nobody can remember what he did for them. The Democrat pulled out because they were performing very badly to give this independent candidate who is very wealthy, who's running as independent, so that he might have a chance to beat Roberts, because I guess the Democrat didn't want to. He knew he wasn't going to win, and so why not give those votes, Democratic votes, to the independent? Then, hopefully, Senator Roberts will lose. But it's a big deal because no one thought this was happening. It came kind of on behind what – it snuck on them, the Republicans, to all of a sudden realize that this guy basically was going to lose big because he's always won. So that's a huge story in that, the Democrats stepped aside to let the independent possibly, who has a better chance of beating this guy, and it looks like he will. So that will be very interesting.
Well, that's good, because we can't let the Republicans take over the Senate, guys. I got to tell you, I'm not a political expert, but I've been in politics a long time, and I know it pretty well. I mean, there are more pundits out there that know more than I do, but we're not gonna take the House, that's for sure. And there's at least a slim possibility that we could lose the Senate. We can't let that happen. The Congress has been very, very divisive, but better to be the way we are now than to go the route that some of these Tea Party people want to take us. I mean, it's just amazing some of the things they want to do. I haven't seen legislation this draconian since – I've never seen things this bad. So I'm all for the independent in Kansas beating the Republican. That's I just want to be on record as saying that. I'm an independent these days.
How does it feel? Does it feel good?
I still feel like a Democrat. It's like when you go to college, right? You still feel like your mom should be doing your dirty laundry. You want to be independent. But you're still going back home. Look, can I tell you what my favorite story of the week is?
What?
An Alabama dog named Lazarus was given a euthanasia injection, and he recovered from it. They tried to euthanize him, but he didn't die.
Huh.
Now, for all of you out there, and by the way, while we're on the subject of religion, let me say happy Yom Kippur.
Where did that come from?
This is off AOL. But let me say happy Yom Kippur to all our Jewish friends out there.
Yes.
I know that was yesterday. But anyway, Lazarus cheats death. A shelter worker can't explain how a black and brown mutt received an euthanasia injection and miraculously recovered. Now, I know that you were a favorite at the confessional on Friday night.
Yes. What?
For those priests, Kathleen Gomez. But do you remember? You were a favorite. They look forward to your confession every Friday.
I never went. That was my problem.
Yeah, well, you probably saved it up. There was probably an occasion. They probably sent out, they didn't have email in those days, but they probably beat the drum. Kathleen's coming to confess. Don't miss this. But if you remember from your Bible study, from your catechism, we used to call it catechism. For those of you that weren't raised in the Catholic Church, catechism is sort of
they tell you what to believe.
Right, and you don't have to read the Bible. It's the Catholic interpretation. It's like Cliff Notes, if you remember from college. But anyway, Lazarus is the man that Jesus rises
from the dead.
Yeah, so how strange is that? That you have a dog named Lazarus, and he comes back to life. I mean, just amazing. I have a very profound faith. I'm not trying to make fun of this for those of you that are out there, but I just think things like that are absolutely amazing, and that's my favorite AOL story so far. Moving on, let's see what.
Let me speak a moment. I have a question.
Okay, go ahead.
Okay, listen. Do you not agree, or do you not feel that being independent has made you a freer person because you're not tied down to ideologue? You can kind of form your beliefs and combine different, you know, ways of thinking to have an independent way and approach of maybe solving this stuff.
No, I don't think so. I think that being a Democrat kept me grounded. I had a mascot. I had a donkey. I had,
I
was supposed to wear blue and not red.
The Democratic Party that my grandfather's time, which is what, you know, because of him, a really hardcore Democrat, because being a Democrat, that's the policies that helped my grandfather when he came from Mexico. Okay. And I think he may have actually, I'm not sure if he was born in Mexico or maybe was born in very, you know, as they just came into Mexico in 1808, something like that. But that's why I was, because my grandfather had a picture of Jesus, the Pope, and John F. Kennedy. You know, that was the triangle,
yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And because of what John F. Kennedy stood for, you know, he's a Catholic, and you know, just everything that he did, you know, just, you know, what other way could you be but Democratic? But, you know, and you and I have had some very, you know, kind of passionate discussions about the fact that I think that in a lot of the rural areas or a lot of, I think Democrats and probably the Republicans too, both parties are pretty corrupt, and they'll do anything they can for the vote. Doesn't matter if it's voter absentee ballots that they fill for other people, or all of a sudden a box shows up under someone's desk, which, you know, happens in Douglas, Arizona all the time, with maybe like seven or eight. It's always about seven or eight, ballots that somehow appear after election polls have closed, and it's the next day. And they get counted. So, you know, I've just seen that the seedy side. I mean, I was very proud to be a Democrat until I went back to Arizona and then kind of was in the trenches and just saw so much corruption that it got to me. And I think the reason the corruption is there, because all that matters is the vote. It doesn't matter the issue or what you stand for. If the platform is what you agreed on and that's what you're going to do, it's all about just getting the vote. And I think that's where it starts turning wrong in politics. Just get out the vote, no matter what. The ends justify the means, and it's probably that way for both parties, and I'm just kind of tired of it, and I think there has to be. I think most of Americans are tired of it and want a different way of thinking, something that's a little bit freer, that can adjust and take on, you know, other, you know, kind of thinking and not be so, you know, in Arizona, trying to get a job and work there, you've got to be like a Republican. It's a model you got to fit. All the cookie cutters have to fit on top of it. And the Democratic Party, you have to be a certain way. You have to be, you know, for open borders and for all this other stuff. And if you think a little bit like a Republican, maybe on there's too many taxes and you want maybe some border security. Well, oh my gosh, you can't be a Democrat. There's no movement to accept different ideas. So I'm just pushing for the independent party. I think that there needs to be more of us, and I wish we could find a leader that could form a third party no matter what the Democrats and Republicans say. So that's my soapbox for tonight.
Well, you know, I just got to say that I think that we need to take you, and what do they do it when the nutty religious groups take you over? We need to deprogram you. No, we need to deprogram you because you've been in Arizona too long. I will agree with you. I will agree with you that basically there's a different platform for Republicans and Democrats and for liberals and conservatives. But as far as people go, you find the same kinds of people on both sides. You know what I mean? I don't think we have any right, and this is a problem that I think we have as liberal Democrats on my side, is that we think that we have some monopoly or some right to the moral high ground, and we certainly don't. We have the same types of people on both sides of the political spectrum. And I think that's what you're talking about. You know, we certainly see plenty of Democrats, especially in Washington, D.C., who have gone to jail for cheating the public or, you know, taking money, all sorts of things. And we have the same thing on the Republican side, too. So we're not... When we start to get this holier than thou attitude, I agree with you. I think it's a terrible thing and it's wrong, and I think people react violently to it. And I think you're also right that there's more of it today than there was when your grandfather had a picture of the Pope and John F. Kennedy. Rancor in Congress right now. We've never had a Congress this divided. Never. There's never been a Congress that's been less productive than the Congress we have right now. So certainly it's worse, and it's worse because of what you said, that, you know, there's a certain set of principles on both sides that have become a litmus test for who you are. And I think you're right that a third party might emerge. I don't know that that's a good thing necessarily. We see in countries like Italy that have many European countries, but Italy's my favorite because I think they had
like 52
different governments in 20 years or something. I mean, they're the best democracy on the planet because they let everybody run the government for a week. So I don't know that a multi-party system solves the problems, but, you know, any more than having the Democrats and Republicans. But certainly it's a problem, especially these days. And you know what's different? Even from when you and I went into politics, Kathleen, you know, we started, I started 35 years ago. You probably started 50 or 60 years ago, but I'm much older than Kathleen, but I started 35 years ago, and she did too, actually. She was just a child in those days. And, you know, the difference is we didn't do it. We weren't in it for the money or the power. We did it because we wanted to make a better world. And there were a lot of people in it that wanted to make a better world in those days. And I'm not sure as many of those people exist anymore. And that would certainly be a shame.
It's interesting because among the young, like say, who like my son's friends, who want to make a change, it's kind of in a dogmatic way. It's based on a certain platform, where I think when we got into it, we wanted to save the planet. We wanted to save everybody. We wanted to save the wells. We wanted to make sure that we didn't die from nuclear warfare. So it was a much broader base that we wanted to save. And now it's very, I think, narrow. You know, very narrow, and it's focus. It's like to save the Republican Party, or to save the Christian right wing, or to save the liberal hug, you know, whatever. It's very specific in who you want to save instead of being very broad like it used to be.
Yeah, I think we had a more of a sense of what it meant to be, rather than single issue. I think you're right. We have more of a sense of what being a Democratic, what being a Democrat was, and what being a Republican was. You know, Republicans were fiscally more responsible. That's how they felt. And Democrats were more liberal on social issues. And now, yeah, it's gotten kind of mixed up because the times have changed so much, you know, that when you know, we joke about my godson and your son, Diego, about being conservative, but his reality is different than ours. You know, when we got out of school, you didn't have any doubt you'd get a good job when you got a college education, did you?
Right. No, I had no doubt about it.
Yeah, me either. And we both got, we actually got crappy jobs working in politics where they barely paid us and they made us work 80 hours a week, but we didn't know any better. We thought those were good jobs.
Well, we thought you had to pay your dues too. It was a matter of not getting everything right at once, but working for it and proving yourself.
Well, and that's another thing. Kids today don't as much feel like they have to pay their dues. You know, we know that my daughter at 13 years old, she's now 21 and a wonderful person, but at 13 years old, she stood up and with all the self-righteousness of a Southern preacher said, I'm the only kid on the face of the planet who's 13 years old and doesn't have her own cell phone, which stunned me. It just stunned me that she could believe that that was the case when there's so much heartache in the world. But she really believed it, you know, and we joke about when Diego complains, we say, well, you know, don't drown in the infinity pool because he's got an infinity pool at college.
Yes, you know? Exactly.
I told him the other day I had an infinity pool in college. We called it the sink, you know, but you know, and there really is a sense of entitlement, I think, that we didn't have because our parents tried to make us grateful for every little thing because they didn't have, there were so many things that they didn't have.
Right.
You know, I think we've lost that.
Quite frankly, the one thing that, you know, I hope to do soon is a kind of an update on the college loan situation. And it just kind of seems like though every time I turn around and look at it, you know, it's just getting bigger and bigger. But that's the other big issue. You know, most of these kids, we were talking to a young woman who had gone to school, I think, at a community college in South Carolina, but then went to Georgetown to get her master's, right? And she was figuring that that's going to really make her special. But she said, you know, well, she's $150,000 in debt, and it wasn't that great of an experience.
Right.
She was looking for a job for anywhere she could. So they do have a very different reality than we did at that time.
Right.
You know, when you could find affordable housing because, you know, if you were willing and young to live in maybe the not so nice part of town, you could find, you know, an apartment for maybe $400 or $500 back then, you know, which still seemed a lot. But is it $3,000 like it is today? You know, so it is a different reality.
And where is the John F. Kennedy? You know, we had leaders like that. Where is the leader that's inspiring us today? You know, I worked my rear end off for Barack Obama, and I think that he's done a relatively good job. I support him as president. But where is the John F. Kennedy? Who's inspiring young people like that? You know, you and I went, there's a lot of good in the world. As you know, I spoke before the Central Union Mission, the other night at a dinner. I was one of the guest speakers, and I was honored to be there. There were 600 people there because they had been giving shelter, food and shelter and program assistance to people in the District of Columbia for 130 years. I mean, that was just amazing to me.
Yes.
So, you know, I was really happy to be there. But there's still a lot of good in the world. There's still a lot of people that do things like that.
Yes, and it was a very interesting group. It was a good mixture of African-Americans and Anglos. I don't know. What do you call white people? I mean, we're so politically correct in this world. I'm always wondering, there's, you know, you got call the Hispanics and all, it's Latinos, and then the African-Americans. And so what are white people? Are they white or are they Anglos or what are they, Caucasians? What do we call, well, how do we refer to them?
I don't know. I mean, I call them my kids mostly, but no, I don't know. I don't think as guys that have been on the top of the food chain for so long in this country, I don't think we've had any special designation for them, and that's and I think that says a lot, you know, that we have.
But I can understand. I can now today. When we have to be so politically correct about the teams that are named after anyone, I mean, I'm surprised there won't be an animal group that comes and says, okay, we can't have, you know, any football teams or anybody named after animals, birds or dogs or wolves or anything, you know. But if we have to be so politically correct, this is one thing that's been interesting, because my son doesn't really, sometimes he's Hispanic, sometimes he's Croatian, but he's always basically saying, you know, it's like being a white guy now is not going to get you very far, and you're kind of at the bottom of the rung, which I think is not the right thing to do. Whatever the whites did, or Anglos, whatever you call them, for so many years, you know, three wrongs don't make one right, two wrongs don't make one right. If we're going to have this thinking that we're all going to be equal, then we have to all act and treat each other with respect. So I was just wondering what to call white people, because I think that that's bad. That's not the right thing to do either. Are they Anglos? Are they Caucasians? Is there another name that you know?
Well, you know, first of all, let me tell you something. This is
I love it whenever you say to me, let me tell you something, or you don't understand. I know I'm going in for, like, you know, a lecture. So go ahead. I'm ready.
All right. First of all, somebody Skyped in the colorless. That's what you call them. But you know what? As far as I've heard this complaint from white people for a long time, you know, we're not what we used to be, you know, we used to be the oppressors, we used to be the oppressors, and now we're just, you know. But you know, the one thing I've never heard when people say it, you know, why can't we be, you know, why don't we get our own special designation? I've never heard a white guy say, I wish I was black. It would be easier to be black. It would be easier to be Hispanic. It would be easier to be Asian. I've never heard a white guy say that. Because the easiest damn thing you'd be like is white.
I know it's hard for you to be quiet, but listen a second. When I was growing up in Douglas, we had two black families, two African-American families. They had all boys, I believe, and they were unbelievable in sports. They were the football, you know, quarterbacks and the baseball stars and the basketball players.
Is there a stereotype you don't embrace? But go ahead.
Oh, but listen, it's the truth. I'm telling you the reality. And they were the stars of the town. I mean, everyone just was like thrilled with them. I mean, they couldn't do any wrong. And everyone would say, God, I wish I was like, you know, Bobby, you know, I wish I was.
Well,
you know,
who the hell doesn't want to be, you know, Muhammad Ali or Michael Jordan? I want to be Michael Jordan.
But to this new generation of kids like Diego and your sons, you know, your son is a white, what would you call your son? White? Caucasian? He's white, right? He's not. It's like Italians are white.
I call him the boy that doesn't cut the damn lawn. That's what I call him.
Well, whatever it is, he's white anyway. And I think he probably has that same kind of attitude. I mean, they are a new generation. And the thing is that, you know, do they have to always be at the bottom of the rung because of what happened? Can't we all just lift each other up to the same level? Or do we have to?
Well, that's certainly what Dr. King was all about. He was about, he didn't want, he, you know, he would say it doesn't behoove you to go from being the oppressed to being the oppressor. That's why he was such a great man. But I don't think we're at the bottom of the rung. I think people just complain about it.
I think you're a six-year-old cranky old man.
You know what? I never regretted being white. And let me tell you something good, the good news about my son. My son once was telling me when he was about I don't know, 10 or 12, we were coming home, and he was telling me about this kid on his soccer team. And the kid had scored this incredible goal, and he was in the middle of this story, and I was trying to follow it. And he was telling me the kid's name was Aaron, and he was like, Aaron did this, and Aaron did that. And there were two kids on the team named Aaron, and one of them was black and one of them was white. And I said to him, was it the white kid or the black kid? And he said to me, I don't know what color he was, but it's the – and I thought to myself, how amazing is that? Because that's the first thing we noticed about kids when we were kids. You know, first you notice what sex they were, and then you notice what color they were. So it made me feel good to think that maybe, just maybe, we're getting beyond this thing. But yeah, people always complain. You know,
and you should know, because you complain the most of them all. So don't go there. Right?
But I complained because I got you in the living room, and I got my wife in the dining room, and the two of you gang up on me. And for every man that's ever done you wrong, I represent all men.
Yes, you do, because all men tend to lie and manipulate.
I used to love my wife's book group. It would always digress at the end to, my dumbass is bigger than your dumbass. You know, they would all sit around talking about their husbands. And then when you accuse them of it, they go, we don't talk about you guys. You know?
Sounds like you were sneaking around trying to eavesdrop on what was going on, which is typical.
I was sneaking around trying to get the pound cake and cookies, you know, because that's another thing that I love about women. They put out a big plate of pound cake and cookies, and then they don't eat any of it. And then when you eat it, they look at you like, hey, fat guy, what are you doing?
When are you going to work out? When are you going to go on the walk?
Get off the cookies and the pound cake. So anyway.
Take a break and regroup.
Yeah, let's take a break. And I'd like to send this song out to all our brothers and sisters, regardless of their color or ethnicity, who are fighting in Hong Kong for their democracy, for their equality. Here is Tracy Chapman with a classic protest song from Bob Dylan. We'll be back in a few minutes.
And now, ladies and gentlemen, Tracy Chapman.
Well, I sent that song out to those people fighting for democracy in Hong Kong. What I really meant to do was send it out to Kathleen. The times, they are a-changing. So you need to get out of the 1940s and come join the rest of us.
Well,
look,
you know what?
I'm moving on.
Wait, hold on a second. I want to have a statement. I promise the audience that next Sunday we will have music that is more to this time on earth, not in the 40s, the 50s, the 60s, but music that has powerful things to say, but is actually written in this time period, like, you know, this year, last year. So I promise that to you, audience. We won't have to go down memory lane next Sunday. That's
okay,
like,
so
no.
If you're a big Echo, if you're a big Echo and the Bunny Man fan, please tune in next, or the Congas. Well, I like the Congas, actually. Here's my next story that I just got to say something about. The Coast Guard rescued a disoriented man in an inflatable bubble. Now, what are you doing in the middle of the ocean in an inflatable bubble?
Is it like those bubbles that you go to the parks, or, you know, like the carnivals, and you're in it and you can like go on water and stuff?
Yeah.
And it's just like a ball?
Yeah. Yeah,
I bet
and
you
this
they
guy
got
was
drunk
trying to make it to Bermuda
in a bubble.
Yeah, so if it were me, I would have sent the Coast Guard out there with a big pin, you know, like a harpoon to get the bubble. Because I'm like, you know, how much do you think that costs to send the Coast Guard out to rescue some nut that's trying to make it to Bermuda in a bubble?
What happened? I mean, did he get too hot in the bubble? Did he not have any water?
No, he was out in the middle. Yeah. he was disoriented because he was out in the middle the ocean in a bubble. I mean, so you got to know something's going wrong there. Wow. You know, I used to say this about my son when he was a little boy, when he was like 10 years old. I remember watching him in the backyard with one day trying to put a rubber trash can on top of another rubber trash can with one of his buddies, and they were going to jump on the one rubber trash can, jump on the next rubber trash can so they could slam dunk the basketball. And I just kept thinking to myself, oh, my God, this is like watching a Roadrunner cartoon. Why don't these guys understand that no matter what happens, they're going to get hurt? There's no way they're going to pull this off without getting hurt. Of course, they were 10 years old at the time, and I stopped them. But I don't understand why when you get in a big inflatable bubble and say, hey, y'all, I'm going to Bermuda. Well, you don't understand that that's not going to turn out well for you. No.
He was probably dropped off by his fraternity brothers, and it was like some kind of joke, and they didn't think it through.
Here's another one I love. 9 unhealthy salads that you may be eating. Salads are unhealthy. What is healthy? If you're out there, please call us and tell us if you know of something that's healthy. Because everything I read, I'm a diabetic, and I've been trying to watch my weight.
No, you have. You are very lazy diabetic. I've been trying to get you to walk on the treadmill. You won't do it. I don't know why.
I'm suffering. The only reason that I'm not losing more weight is I'm suffering from the stress of Kathleen and my wife trying to get me to walk on the treadmill.
But we get up every morning.
I have a fear that my wife is taking out a big insurance policy on me.
And put it with me.
Yeah, and their plan is to run me into the ground and then split the money and find some young guys and get in a plastic bubble and go to Bermuda.
Cuba. We're going to Cuba.
That's my big fear. So. So the stress is down. But what is – I mean, I can't get on the internet without seeing something that's unhealthy for me. And now the one thing that I've been – you know, I say, well, at least, you know, I eat salads. Now they're unhealthy. So I don't know what to eat.
Well, it's probably the way they're raised. And like if they come from Mexico, you know, there was this huge outbreak of I forget the name of it, but it gets you very sick because they had imported all this lettuce from Mexico, but it had – been polluted by, I think, sewage or something as it was growing and had been washed and came over into the United States and got a lot of people sick. So I think it refers to where it's coming from and how it's handled. And you have to be very, very careful and wash. A lot of people get these bags that just say salad mix and they just eat it from there. You have to, and even if it says pre-wash, you have to wash lettuce and all those, all those salads very, very well. For it to be really probably healthy from you. And it depends on, you know, like red leaf lettuce is good. But if you eat iceberg, that's not very good for you. There's no nutrients in iceberg lettuce.
Well, I don't know what to eat now. I'm just going back to drinking Coca-Cola and eating red meat and
snacking everywhere.
And you know what? You know, I smoked unfiltered Camel cigarettes for 30 years. You know, so I'm just going back to doing all the things that they told me were terrible for me that I gave up, because now all the things I gave up and I thought I was doing the right thing, I'm not doing the right thing anymore. Here's another headline that just drives me nuts. It says, U.S. finds scary pattern in ISIS beheadings. Well, yeah.
What?
It says, militants use beheadings to make up for losses. They say they're finding a scary pattern. Well, I mean, I'm sure I have to read the story because I'm sure it's just the headline that's screwy, but of course it's scary. You know, these people seem to have no bottom line. I got to tell you, these ISIS people, they really are scary, and the world is getting to be a scarier and scarier place, is it not?
Yes.
You know, But yeah,
they
what
just
a crazy
beheaded one. Just so,
yeah, I
from
know.
France, right?
Yeah, no, I think it was English,
thing.
But he was an aid worker. It's just terrible. It's terrible to bring this your political frustrations against these people who really have not done. You know, you're holding them responsible for what you see, what you feel their government has done to you. It's just a terrible thing, especially an aid worker. You know, this guy's out over there. Nobody becomes an aid worker because they want to get wealthy. You know, they're out there helping make a better world, and it's just terrible. 10 famous men who really love their wives. That's another one. Now, I know for
who those 10 famous men are.
Well, George Clooney is one of them. You know, of course, he's been
how many women he's been? He's been like with so many women. He's been married 3 days. Give me a
he's been married 3 days, right? Yes. Give him a week. Give him a week and she'll start getting on his ass about getting on the treadmill and what he has to eat, and that'll change. But I think there's at least 12 men in the whole world that really love their wives. I just want to go on record that my name is not on the list, but I'm one of them. I'm one of those men that really
I'll
loves
have to
my
inform
wife.
Inform your wife.
Yes, please tell her.
I will.
It's because she doesn't make me walk on the treadmill. you know.
Tell me who else is on that list.
I got to go back to it. This is all on AOL. This is what we care about. In a world as complex as ours, we care about the 10 guys.
Love their wives. Famous men.
Famous guys who love their wives. There are a lot of us not famous guys that love our wives. But out of
Bill Clinton, one of them?
2 million people. You know, why are you picking on Democrats? I'm sure there are independents out there that are not to their wives.
Well, I think Colin Paul is independent. And he's his wife.
One of them. Let's see. Who are the 10 guys? Brad Pitt.
Okay.
You know, okay. He loves his wife.
I think he's chained, though. I think he's chained to a bedpost most of the time.
I like Brad Pitt. I like him, and I think he's a good guy.
You don't think that Jolie is the one who controls everything in that relationship?
That's a happy man. A happy man that understands that his wife's in control. Everything else is an illusion. You know?
True.
You think you're in control, but you're not. Right.
You know what my mom said to me? And I wish I had actually taken her advice because it was correct. She says, you know, you don't have to make them realize that it's your idea. She goes, let them think it's their idea, that they're the ones that came up with it. Just go ahead and let them take the credit, because then you'll get what you want. You don't have to take the credit for it. Let them believe that it was all something that they decided upon when you know it was you who decided it. You just got to let them go ahead and think it was them. Well, of course, I could never do that. I was like, it's
of
my idea.
Of course you could never do it. You got to say, it's my idea. Even when it's my idea, you say it's your idea.
Oh, my gosh.
And then you call me stupid. You don't even say, it's my idea. You go, it's my idea, stupid.
That's right. But you don't understand. I always follow it up with, and you don't understand. That's always, you know, something I tell you too, right?
Well, that's because you don't understand. I have to point that out to you. That wasn't your idea. You know, everything. Of course, you don't take credit for any of the ideas that don't work.
Well, because they're not my ideas.
If they don't work, then they're my idea. I'm the one that came up with it.
Exactly.
But 10 famous men. You know, the best part of this is everybody out there listening needs to go to AOL and click on this, because the screen is blank except for Brad Pitt. So really, there's only one guy that loves, real famous guy that really loves his wife, evidently. It's not all of them. And here's another one. Somebody's come up with dance your way to work a little bit. This will make you safer.
Nice.
That's what they're saying, that if you dance while you're on the street corner, that will make you safer. No, in Washington, D.C., in New York, imagine dancing on the street corner. People would throw you in the traffic.
No, I've seen people dressed up as angels on a, you know, one of those bikes that's just a big wheel, one big wheel. And like, you know, I mean, I've seen everything in New York, but I can't imagine, you know, what are you supposed to dance to, something like the music in your head, or...
Because if you're listening to your iPod and you're dancing, you're probably wandering into traffic, and you're going to get run over. I really don't.
Let me say, being in D.C., these have got to be the worst drivers. I mean, today we were behind somebody, and I mean, they just didn't go when the light changed. They had to be reading their text messages or emails on their phone. It was just horrific, and I think that so many of us are. We see each other. I mean, like, we've been at some of the metro stops, and everyone is wired. They got the little plugs in their ears. I think they're going to come down the line and say, we're all going to have ear problems from putting these things in your ears. And, you know, who knows what will happen from it. But it's amazing how everyone is wired.
Well, I have to – there's some sad news here. The leader of Paul Revere and the Raiders died.
No.
Yeah.
Oh, that's
Diane's home in Idaho. I think it was Paul Revere, but I don't know. And if I'd known, we would have played one of the. Here's another great one. X Model 62 bears all in an interview. Now here, this is where I agree with women. When Sean Connery was 62, no, you wouldn't have seen a news article about him that says women think Sean Connery is handsome and you shouldn't throw rocks at him. But here we have this woman that was a model, and she's 62, and they've got a whole story on the internet about how, you know, amazing it is that she's 62 and she still looks good.
I mean, so many of these women, like Jane Fonda, looks pretty darn good. Yeah. And she's in, like, what, her late 70s, early 80s. But let me also point out Sean Connery. Yes.
70s or 80s? What are you, crazy?
Yes, Jane Fonda is that age. Yes, she is. She's, you know, way past in her late 70s, my friend. Yes. And the thing about Sean Connery is that, you know, don't you remember when he was slapping around his wife and saying that he was just keeping her in shape or something like that?
Oh, you got to pick out the bad.
What is the truth? He was like all over the place.
You know what? I happen to know Sean Connery personally, and I know that incident had to do with her being on his back about getting on a treadmill.
Listen, you should be so lucky. I care enough that you live another month or two. You know, you really should.
Yeah,
I don't know what I'll do with my Sunday evenings if something happens.
As somebody that admires politicians, yeah, it was really a dumb thing when somebody interviewed him and asked him about slapping his wife, and he said, you know, it was good for her or something. I can't remember what he said, but it was definitely the wrong thing to say there, Sean. And you might have been, you know, you might have been a good actor, but you certainly weren't a good husband. That's a terrible, terrible problem in the world. I worked for a shelter for battered women, a program called My Sister's Place here in Washington. It was one of the first direct mail pieces that I ever did. And I looked to do it. I did research on battered women and was just amazed. What a common problem it is, and how many women it affects, regardless of their race or socioeconomic status. It's just incredible. You know, when I was a kid, I was not only not allowed to raise my voice to my mother, I was not allowed to raise my voice to my older sister. So, I've always been taught to respect women, and certainly, let me go on record as saying this. It's the first and last time I'll say it. Kathleen, please cover your ears. But if there is a better gender among us, it's certainly women. You know, they give us so much. They add so much to our lives. They are our nurturers and our strength. You know, if you're a man and you don't respect the woman around you, you need help. Let me just say that. We need more. We need to do more to make sure that they're taken care of. I have two daughters in life, not taken care of. That's the wrong way to put it. Respected, because they're well able to take care of themselves. But I have two daughters in life. They are my joy and my strength. And with that, I'm going to give. We're almost out of time. Imagine that. And as scary as this is, I'm going to give Kathleen the last word.
Well, you always say when we don't have a guest that we're going to wing it. But I think that in many ways we talk about things that are just like on everybody's mind. And we just happen to talk to quite a few people, so there's always a lot of things to say. But I want to thank everyone for listening. And we do hear from people from time to time, and they seem to be enjoying the show. And we really enjoy doing it. And next week we hope to have some different people than we've had in the past come on and talk about statehood, which is now being in D.C. now, I think it's even more important because it's so obvious of how unfair and unequal it is to treat the people of D.C. differently than everyone else. So that's kind of what I'm going to say as we go out.
Okay.
D.C. for statehood. So.
It's time for statehood.
That's right.
We hope that you'll keep on listening to us. I told her I was getting rid of the last word, and now I'm not. I just hope you keep on listening to us because we really do love doing this, and we love reaching out, and we love it even more when you reach back. So have a great week, and we'll see you next week.
Give the people their right to vote. Give the people their right to vote. Give the people their right to vote. Give the people their right to vote.